Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Stop the podcast!
Stop the podcast!
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
And welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic taking you through this Friday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. Marquise Munson behind the glass. And Munson, we haven't even gotten to your beloved NBA returning last night. What did you make of your Lakers and their game against the Clippers?
Man, it was some sloppy basketball, man, on both sides.
Yeah,
both games was pretty sloppy, but obviously everyone kind of expected that because, you know, they're just getting back into play. So, you know, yes, scrimmages are good, but this is why you need, like, in-game reps for that reason, because those games last night were sloppy. I think it was like 14 turnovers in the first quarter of that Jazz and Pelicans game. And so, yeah, but the presentation was awesome. I know a lot of people don't like the virtual fans.
Yeah.
And they you know, in the Zoom, it kind of looks a little weird when they're sitting there. I think Chris Bosh was one of them.
Yeah.
He was a virtual fan during that Lakers game. But
let's go Heat.
But look, that Laker, if you didn't watch the second half of that Lakers-Clippers game, man, you missed out on a great game.
I needed the sleep, but when I left my 12-year-old to watch the rest of the game, like, I have to go to bed. And I was like, the Lakers are just going to roll in this game. They were, you know, no Lou Williams. And it just, and I find out it's a 2-point game, like an unbelievable finish. So that's, I feel bad for missing it. Also, you know what else I feel bad about? And I don't get this at all. Why the heck is Zion Williamson not playing at crunch time for the
Pelicans? Yeah, which is weird because he wasn't really on a minutes restriction, but they were limiting his play. Like, so the first quarter he played 3 minutes, second quarter he played like 3 minutes, and he had like 59 points at that point.
Best player on the court.
Yeah, best player on the court easily when he was on the court. And then obviously once he got to, I think he played 15 minutes in the game total, and they just kind of sat him out. So I don't know if it's, you know, they're trying to manage, you know, the minutes that he plays, and Zion's not to the point of his career where he can walk up to, you know, Alvin Gentry and be like, hey, I need to play. I'm the best player on the court. You need to put me out there. Kind of like how Michael Jordan did when the Bulls were, you know, sitting him out and putting him on a minutes restriction, and obviously they were like bidding for a playoff spot, and Jordan's like, come on, man, you got to let me play. And they're like, nah, you're good. Sit on the bench. We're trying to get a lottery pick over here, dog. It's not that situation, but you know, obviously with Zion's size and you know, his coming back from an injury, they're trying to play it safe for him. But then again, when you look back on that game, you lost that game by two, and you look back on
and
this,
you should have won that game.
And you should have won that game because the Jazz played awful. If it wasn't for Donovan Mitchell scoring like the last 8 points for the Jazz, they would have easily lost that game.
And then that one great pass to Gobert. But yeah, I mean, yeah. Like if it's a minutes thing, then take 2 minutes out early. But like, I mean, I'm wondering if the Pelicans just don't want to be in the playoffs. Like they don't even want to mess around with it. Like, hey, let's just regroup and we'll get a few games in and they'll take the summer. I don't know.
Which was That's a wasted, stupid. Which was a complete wasted game by the Pelicans, because if you're in a situation to where you're one game, if you're one game away from being that nine seed to be able to play the Grizzlies in that play-in tournament, it's going to mess you up big time, because this game, you had Brandon Ingram who played lights out. J.J. Redick was balling last night. J.J. Redick and Brandon Ingram were both on a tear last night. So imagine adding Zion to that mix with those two being as hot as they were. You could have easily won that game. They had control of that entire game, especially in the first half. And then obviously, you know, the Jazz came back with Jordan Clarkson shooting everything as humanly possible. But, you know, they should have kept him in the game. But it was two good basketball games. They're both sloppy, but it's like week one NFL. Like you kind of expect guys to be a little sluggish, come out the gate a little slow. But the presentation of it, I think Ian Eagle and Stan Van Gundy did a great job on commentary.
Stan's good.
Yeah, they're awesome. Like, I want Stan to be the complete broadcast team. Like, I want him to be part of it. Reggie Miller does a great job as well, but
then my
I
guy,
do
Kevin
like Stan
Harlan. Man. Kevin Harlan.
Oh, yeah.
He can call a game in a phone booth.
Oh, yeah,
he's
he
awesome.
Can. He's easily the
and
best.
And then the best show on television also, by the way.
Oh, yes.
Barkley, you know. Barkley,
oh, easily.
Kenny,
NBA.
Shaq, and Ernie. I mean, it's.
I posted a picture of me hugging my TV.
Was good. Yeah, that was good.
You know, because it was. I miss those guys, man.
Did y'all get a point yesterday where you had, like, this moment of zen? Like, you know, Predators hockey was on, baseball's on.
Yeah.
NBA basketball is back for real.
We were doing
It's been a long time since we've done that.
Amazing stuff. Well, we were doing the Zoom, you know, press conference with the Predators, and then the NBA is starting in the background, you know. It's like. Man, good stuff. Yeah, yeah. I thought it was all beautiful.
It was.
See, now, they did NBA TV episodes, but they weren't previewing games. They were just like, they would have a special episode where they talk about social justice. They had a special episode where they talked to Adam Silver. So they came back, like, in spurts, but it felt good to watch those four actually talk about a game and actually rant and banter about an actual game. Shaq was late because he like got stuck in traffic, and so they made fun of him.
See what he's wearing?
Yes, he was wearing like a blazer with a sports coat. Yeah. I'm like, what is? Oh, this show's amazing. I don't know why the show's so good, but it's just great.
It was great. Major League Baseball. And it came out last night. I think Jeff Passan and Ken Rosenthal had reports on this that Major League Baseball is expected to announce, I think today, that it will stage 7-inning doubleheaders starting on August the 1st. No decision yet on extending 30-man rosters. So what do y'all make of Major League Baseball moving to 7-inning doubleheaders starting on August 1st? And why is this like just now becoming a point of contention with Major League Baseball? It's almost like, did y'all spend any time whatsoever kind of thinking about what you were going to do for these games while you're trying to plan to have a season in the middle of a global pandemic? Like, it's, I think Ryan Poore talked about this last night. Like, you spent so much time arguing over money that you forgot to actually think about what in the world you were going to do. That's what it just seems like for Major League Baseball right now.
It's like they didn't have a plan. I mean, they're close to just, I'm telling you, just get the wiffle balls out, you know? And, you know, people in baseball are not happy with it, and I don't blame them. I know 7-inning doubleheaders, I mean, that's a minor league thing. We see it in college baseball, but it's Major League Baseball, and it's just, meanwhile, you've got what? You've got up to 19 on the Marlins.
Yeah.
Now the Phillies have positives, so you're canceling more stuff based on that disaster or nightmare, even though Rob Manfred will not apply that word to it. I think it qualifies. And now, yeah, they just continue to look unprepared and like they're just making stuff up on the fly.
I don't have a problem. It's like by itself with moving to 7-inning doubleheaders because, look, I like baseball. I played baseball for a long time growing up. Anything to shorten the length of a baseball game, I'm cool with. I'm absolutely cool with it. I understand, especially if you're like a traditionalist and you love Major League Baseball, nine innings is the way to go, and I get that. I understand that. I don't have as much of a problem with moving to seven innings as most people do. To me, the problem lies with just the total lack of preparation from Major League Baseball, or at least the appearance of total lack of preparation from Major League Baseball. It almost seems like they're just making things up as they go along. There's no structure. There's no plan, or at least the plan that they have obviously is not very good. So it just, we were talking yesterday, I think, about commissioners in pro sports and how, you know, we really like what the NHL has done in the bubble situation. Gary Bettman's handled it well. Obviously, Adam Silver, what the NBA has been able to do. Roger Goodell, I guess, to a lesser degree. Manfred.
He's not as hated by the entire world right now as at other times of his life.
Exactly. Rob Manfred, throughout not only this, but his handling of the Astros situation, just everything, it has been a disastrous tenure for Manfred so far as MLB commissioner.
Yeah. I mean, just yesterday, it's like every day we have a new thing with him. Yesterday, we're talking about the Joe Kelly getting the equivalent of, what, 21, 22 game suspension for throwing at someone, which, again, I'm sorry, but that's just...
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And now we have this, and there will be more to come. They just, I mean, baseball, you know, one time you've got one team, and this is, I think, for non-bubble sports, this is the fear, but you got all these things that result from that, and now you're like, well, you're going to have a whole bunch of doubleheaders. I mean, how many more are you going to have to schedule? You know, there's going to be another thing here. And it just continues to look like an unprepared commissioner who was focused on just trying to get anything together to play, and they finally did. But in the meantime, it seems like maybe you could have spent a little bit more time getting ready for that eventuality.
How much of a missed opportunity has this entire situation been for baseball? And what I mean by that is this. If they would have gotten their stuff together and come to an agreement earlier, they could have been playing for the past month and a half while nobody else was playing. While the NHL wasn't playing, NBA wasn't playing, NFL training camps weren't about to fire up. And now, I mean, they've messed around long enough, and they messed around to the point where it doesn't even really look like they're prepared to play. Like, they've just kind of gone into it. How much of a missed opportunity has the way this thing has been handled by both the MLB and the players? I'm not going to let the players off the hook in this either. How much of a missed opportunity has this been for baseball in the way that this has been handled?
Huge. I mean, look, baseball in some markets is still very, very strong, and that's the strength of baseball. I mean, financially, it's local television deals.
Yeah.
You know, it's market to market. Overall, it's still, you know, strong, but baseball does have a lot of concerns, and even just looking at the youth level, it's a lot different than what I think when you were a kid.
Yeah.
I know for sure when I was a kid, and the ability there to kind of have the stage to yourself for a few weeks, basically to yourself for a few weeks, I think that actually could have been really good for baseball. And so then they botch that, and now they're botching more things. And so I think this speaks to leadership for baseball. You're right. Look, this was both sides. Everybody was mad at both sides. Both sides deserve criticism. It was the collective baseball's inability to get it done. But, yeah, that was 3 weeks of all we're doing is watching baseball. Because I'm honestly still watching more baseball now, even with the other stuff starting up, because of just that starvation of sports. But imagine what it would have been. You know, the 4th of July should have been baseball.
Yeah, no question about it. When we come back, a huge announcement yesterday by the SEC. We're going to react to that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Can you explain why September 26th?
Well, a lot. And it begins with we wanted to set a start date, and that's really the point of emphasis. And it follows our return to campus. And over the last 2 weeks of August, we're going to have tens of thousands of people back on our campuses and our locales. We're going to be reengaging in education. It will be different as we live in this COVID environment, and we need to make sure that happens and happens well. And our athletics programs operate in the context of our universities, despite what some may write from time to time. That is absolutely our reality. And this decision is a recognition of that reality, wanting to make sure we welcome people back, that whatever learning and change has to happen around our campuses takes place in a great way, and that will allow us to play the football season.
That was SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey on with Paul Feinbaum yesterday, talking about the decision the SEC has made to move to a 10-game conference-only schedule. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. And real quickly, be listening today in the 8 o'clock hour for your cue to call to win a free Nashville Predators jersey. That's right. I said a free Nashville Predators jersey. The fifth caller will qualify for the free jersey. The winner will be announced at 5:45 during Jared and the GM. Don't forget Sunday's game one coverage versus Arizona begins at noon with puck drop at 1 o'clock. A special edition of Preds Extra begins at 10 a.m. with Jared Stillman and Chase McCabe on ESPN 102.5 The Game, your flagship home of the Nashville Predators radio network. Joe, big decision by the SEC yesterday to move to a 10-game conference-only schedule with a start date of September 26th. So I don't think a surprise, especially after what we saw the ACC do the other day and when they moved to a 10-game conference-only schedule plus one with an out-of-conference game of their choosing in their home state. What's your reaction to the SEC moving to a conference-only schedule, and what do you think it means in terms of the likelihood that this season gets played?
I don't know that it means a lot about the likelihood. I mean, that's still a bigger question for all these conferences that clearly don't like working together. But it means, sorry, ACC, you guys can add your plus one, but it's not going to be with us.
Right.
So there's some really good games lost in that. I think the SEC, you know, the timing of it is significant. You're talking about September 26th for the start date, and that is, it's push it back as long as you can and hope things get better. Because you hope things get better in these states, in these cities, and that they don't really get bad when students are arriving on campus, which to me is still why, if you want to talk about likelihood of games, let's see how it looks when that starts happening. Because here you go, Rutgers, some little party with kids. Oh, outbreak. Everybody's quarantined. There was another recent one just like that. I mean, just about every one of these gets tied to some indoor gathering of young people, which young people like to have indoor gatherings.
Sure.
In bars and in dorms and in frat houses and whatever. This is why I'm still dubious of this happening. But if it does happen, now the SEC has this schedule. Look, it's appealing to not have any more, maybe not like for Vanderbilt. Like Vanderbilt, if this season gets played now, you're talking about, I mean, you're talking, yeah, Munson's over
Munson's licking like, his chops in
Munson's
there.
Munson's like, yeah. Oh, the Crimson Tide, get a little.
I can't wait. That's the dream matchup of the century. Alabama versus Vanderbilt. The smart kids versus the kids that love to play football.
Where were you? What was it, 17 or 18 when
Alabama came here and scored like 600 points?
We were talking about homers and all my Alabama friends who cover the Crimson Tide in the press box. I swear to you, Casa Grande, they were all like, oh, this is going to be a game. Vanderbilt just beat K-State, and it was like, no, Bama's not playing well. This is going to be a good game. You know, Vanderbilt guys out there, you're next, Alabama.
Yeah, wasn't that the game after, like, the Vanderbilt kid told him they were going to show Alabama how to play football in
the
SEC?
Matter of fact,
he said, you're next. He said, you're next, Alabama.
Didn't they win that game, like, 14-13, too?
Yeah.
They won that game. It was a fairly close game. And it's not like they blew out K-State.
But it's Vanderbilt. Yeah, I mean, it was still a big win for Vanderbilt.
They're hype. But
so Alabama comes in. Actually, I remember it just ugly, just like they could have named their score. And I also remember in the fourth quarter, I'm like, who is that kid? Oh, my gosh. this kid named Tua, can't say his last name. I'm like, that dude might take that job at some point.
He was really good in that game.
Yeah, so so Vanderbilt had Mercer. They had, like Colorado State. I mean, they've got this rebuilt. They've got a chance to get a few wins.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, Derek Mason's 17-9. I'm citing Mitch Light's stats on The Athletics. He wrote a blurb on this. 17-9, Derek Mason in non-league action.
Yeah.
10-38 in SEC games. I mean, Vanderbilt, this is not good for Vanderbilt.
No.
It's also not good for Tennessee fans and college football fans in general who were excited. I know I was excited to see Oklahoma for the first time.
Oh, I was so
pumped see Tennessee
up.
Play Oklahoma. Kind of one of those, Oklahoma's loaded, but they've got transition at skill, and Tennessee maybe could physically push them around with that offensive line and make it a game.
I was so excited.
That's out the window. And then we don't know yet, of course, what the schedules are. There are apparently different models of who's going to play who.
So according to Ross Dellinger, who's been, closely on this, Vanderbilt would play Mississippi State and Alabama if the two games were to be added.
Yeah, and they're talking about kind of rolling over with your next crossover opponents.
Yeah,
right?
Which Georgia is trying to fight because they don't want Florida, because that means Florida would have to go to Athens, and Georgia doesn't want to go to Gainesville next season if they allow fans next year.
Right.
So they're trying to avoid having Florida, but Ross has Arkansas and Mississippi State for Georgia. And for the Vols, they have
LSU, right?
Ole Miss and LSU.
Yeah.
Which, you know what?
Kiffin. Orgeron.
Oh, man.
Well, I missed the opportunity because we talked about this before, and I really want rivalries to come back. So I would love for Alabama to play Florida. I would love for Alabama to play Florida in a regular season game, and then I would love Vandy to play Alabama because that's a rivalry game as well.
Oh, yeah.
And I would like to see UT play Auburn because I think that would be a big game for them as well. And obviously a lot of questions surround Alabama's schedule every year. Oh, they don't play anybody, even though they play in the best division in college football, but
correct.
Whatever. But I think having Florida on the schedule as their SEC East opponent outside of adding a Vanderbilt kind of helps Alabama's case a little bit better. So.
Well, Alabama already has Georgia on the schedule this year, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a
huge You got Georgia, LSU, Texas A&M. Like, they got a pretty tough schedule. But it's the same thing for the Vols, because if you're the Vols, you probably want to add someone from the SEC West that's going to give you some kind of, obviously, you already have Alabama, so obviously you want to add an LSU or, an Auburn, because it kind of boosts your stock a little bit. Yeah, you're in the danger zone of losing that game and then falling,
See, I would argue the other way.
Yeah, like, I think
you want to add, Ole Miss or, Mississippi State, because – I mean, think about the murderer's row that the Vols usually have to go through. And it's kind of separated now with the different way they're doing the schedules. But it used to be like Florida, Georgia, some random school like Texas A&M, and then Alabama, back to back to back to back. I mean, especially when Tennessee's been going through this rebuild they were going through. I mean, it just kills your season right there.
So you're saying, Mark, you're talking about Tennessee. Are you saying boost their stock like you're saying Tennessee as a playoff contender? Is that what you're saying?
Well, it's just all – but it all –
because that's what it would have to be, and I don't think they're
yet. Yeah, but it all depends on what the expectations for the Vols is. Now, if your expectation is to finish as a top-10 team, then maybe you will have to add, maybe one more team to boost that stock. To get fans' hopes up, because obviously you got a good recruiting class coming in the following year, so that's going to be the year that people expect you to actually produce when it comes to the wins and losses. But if you want to win a playoff, or if you want to contend for an SEC championship, you're going to have to add some teams that can possibly boost your resume a little bit.
Well, but now, it
just all
record,
depends
right?
on how they
it's
do
just
this.
Your record.
Yeah, but it all depends on how they do this. I don't know. But right now you have Florida, you have Missouri, South Carolina, Alabama, Arkansas. You have UK, Georgia, and Vanderbilt. So when you look at that schedule, Georgia and Alabama is going to boost your stock in Florida. So what's one more game with an Auburn or a tough game like that? What's going to hurt? You already played three games against opponents who are probably going to finish in the top 10 anyway.
Well, but again, it's just because, I mean, there's still a championship game. The SEC is still doing divisions. Like, the ACC got rid of that, right?
Right, right.
ACC got rid of it. The SEC is still...
Yeah, they're still doing division.
You just want 2 week games so you can have a... Just get to the title game, right? I mean, and the playoff here, too. I mean, the SEC is going to say, we're the best league. We play each other, and that's good. But other leagues are going to be like, well, who'd you beat outside the SEC, you know? I mean, again, and this is all if this happens. If it does happen, I'm not going to miss, you know, the bad games that happen in a college football season.
But it works out in Tennessee's favor because you got Georgia, you got possibly, and we don't know how the schedule is going to be, you know, changed and the dates or whatever. But as of right now, you have Florida in the beginning of the season, Alabama obviously in October, and then Georgia towards the end of the season.
Which is new. Georgia's usually right after Florida.
Yeah. So, yeah, it balances out. But so if you want to add an Ole Miss, you know, to beat up on them because they're probably going to be awful this year, or you want to add a Mississippi State, like, yeah, that's cool. But, I mean, what's going to hurt if you add Auburn? Auburn's still, like, you don't really know about Auburn.
Well, you're not adding it anyway. Computer is adding it for you.
I'm adding Vandy, so I don't care. As long as I get Alabama Vandy, I don't care. That is the game of the century.
Oh, man.
Let's talk about LSU-Alabama. Let's talk about Alabama versus Vandy.
That's right.
Do we know where that would be?
Probably
should
Bama.
Be in Jerry World because it's so amazing. It's such a spectacle, and it has to be in Jerry World. Duh.
Just make it the national championship game.
Might as well.
When we come back, our good friend David Ubbin from The Athletic will join us. We'll get into a little bit of this conversation with him as well. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Commissioner, I know this may not have been determined yet. Maybe it has, but fans want to know. You understand that better than anyone. How are you going to determine the additional two games for the 14 schools?
Yeah, we've been running any number of models, if you will, in thinking about how that decision can be made. Our athletics directors early in the week suggested let's make the first decision so we can then make the second decision. And that second decision is exactly what the format will look like. I know our colleagues in the ACC were able to put out the matchups quickly, and obviously some different dynamics there. Our two other colleague conferences that made announcements earlier in July took a bit of time to make their announcement. In fact, we're still waiting. So we just want to make sure that we walk through what is a really difficult decision on altering the season, and then we'll work towards finalizing exactly that format and be ready to go, I think, in short order with that information. It gives great conversation on afternoon shows, too, for a while, does it not?
That was SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey on with Paul Feinbaum discussing the potential plans for what the format could look like after the SEC moves to a 10-game conference-only schedule. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad. And to help us talk a little bit more about this, we're going to bring in one of our good friends, David Ubbin from The Athletic. David, what's going on, my man? Thanks for joining us.
Not much, guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, David, what's your immediate reaction to the SEC announcing that they're moving to a 10-game conference-only schedule?
Hopefully they get to play all 10 games. I mean, this is sort of inevitable, but I think anybody that still thought that a 12-game schedule, especially non-conference, can provide testing issues, some initial safety issues, but most importantly, flexibility was going to be difficult. I mean, this is sort of about, you know, it is about testing, but it is about, hey, when the inevitable, you know, forfeiture of a game happens, let's be able to be nimble. And when it's one conference office sort of running things with ADs and coaches that are familiar with each other, that's going to be easier. And so, you know, ultimately, I think that's what this is kind of about.
What about the Oklahoma game? David, you wrote, you know, it could be helpful to a rebuilding program. I'm sad about it, you know. Mm-hmm. And of course, not that I was especially optimistic it was going to happen anyway, but you wrote about, you know, there is still the potential for this team if things open on September 26th, if the Florida game that right now is scheduled for that day is the game that day for an early statement win. But how would, if this does happen, how does this sort of change the path for this team?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's obviously Tennessee's been there pretty recently. They already played, what, I think it's 2014. They came to Norman. I'm not too sad. I covered Oklahoma previously. I've been a lot of time in the Big 12, so I'll be okay. But yeah, kind of like I wrote about. I mean, I just think this was probably not the best year to go to Oklahoma. I think when you got a team that can compete for a playoff spot, man, you better play those kinds of games, because you win that game, all of a sudden you got the inside track to the playoff. You lose it, it's not going to hurt you that much, because Oklahoma is probably going to be in the playoff anyway. You know, these are great games for those types of teams to play. They're not great games for a team that's won eight games and still trying to show progress, because, you know, like I wrote, I think Tennessee's got a roster that's a 9 or 10 win team, but they got a schedule that's going to make it real hard to win eight games. And if you have a couple injuries and, you know, you maybe don't play well, ball don't bounce your way a couple times, Tennessee could be a much better team and still finish 7-5. You know, the same record they finished a year ago. So that's kind of where they're at. I think, you know, for the sake of college football, it's hard to see because these are great games. There's a lot of non-conference games that we lost yesterday that were going to be great games. But in Tennessee's case, you know, I think this is just a rough time for that game to be played. But, you know, like I said, they scheduled this coming off of the 2016 season when you won 18 games in 2 years. That's the kind of attitude you should have. I think Tennessee could probably do well to beef up their schedule. I mean, you look at it moving forward, you know, they got the return trip to Oklahoma in 2024, and then they got Nebraska in 2026-27. But up until then, I mean, there's not a lot of great games on the docket. You know, they've played a couple decent ones. BYU is that game that they're going to Provo in a couple years, but it's like Pitt, you know, and then BYU, and there's not a lot of marquee games. But I hope they play some more games like this Oklahoma game in the future.
David, Joe and I have been talking all week since we came back on the air about, you know, just the confidence level that we have in college football getting completed in the fall, or maybe even just started in the fall. And there's so many different elements to consider when you talk about students coming back on campus and, you know, the different responsibilities college students have, you know, the different maybe points of maturity from college students. Where's your confidence level in college football right now that we're going to get games in this fall, and certainly that we're going to get games in the season completed in the fall?
Well, I think there will be some games. I mean, the big question is what happens when the students come back. You know, some schools are going to be online only, but the majority of Power 5 schools are going to be students on campus. You know, how much are players interacting with their fellow students? I think you're going to see some outbreaks on college campuses. It feels completely inevitable. I think if you're drawing up, you know, the worst possible place to prevent the spread of a virus, college campus can be pretty high. You know, 18 to 22-year-olds that are living in close quarters in a lot of cases, many of them feel invincible. You know, they're probably some of the lowest risk group to, you know, at this, they're feeling like, well, I'm going to be okay if I get this, which they probably will be, but not everyone will. And so you're going to see probably some high numbers of cases in some places, and that could put the entire season in jeopardy. I mean, it's going to be conference by conference, but if you've got, you know, half the SEC where you got 20 guys that are infected, that's going to be a problem. So I don't doubt that there will be some games played, but you have to kind of limit how many outbreaks are happening on campuses, because if the season shuts down, that's sort of why it's going to happen.
If you were made the commissioner of college football, David, and you had full power right now, would you push forward with this? Or would you say, you know what, things could look a lot different with the virus in the spring? We could have this amazing, even though you're going to lose a lot of players who are going to be getting ready for the NFL, you could have this amazing spring of like March Madness and college football and College World Series. If you could just wave the wand and make that decision, what would you do?
I'd pay the players and establish bubbles. That's what I would do. I mean, you can't do a bubble, but that's obviously what you have to do. And I think if you could do some regional bubbles, you know, you know, two or three maybe in the SEC, yeah, that would, I think that you could do that. You know, if you did one, you know, in Atlanta or one in Birmingham or something, and folks just stayed there and maybe, you know, went between the bubbles or something along those lines, it would work. But when you have unpaid athletes, you can't do that. And that's where you're at. I think obviously, you know, college football, the entire economic structure is exploitive in a lot of ways. And, you know, this is where we're at. You know, you can't really, a lot of the problems and the reasons why college football is going to have such a more difficult time, you know, trying to pull this off compared to the NBA, we'll see what the NFL does. It is a lot of those economic questions. And so, yeah, I mean, the short answer is I think that, you know, it seems like if you're not in America and you're not in a bubble, or if you're not in America, you're in a bubble, you can pull off sports. We've seen that time and time again. But if you're not in a bubble and you're trying to play sports in America where the virus has had some major issues, it's been problematic. And so here's hoping for the best, but we'll see how it goes.
David Ubben from The Athletic on the line with us. And, David, obviously we don't know for sure at this point who the extra opponents for Tennessee are going to be. But let's just say, for the sake of argument, that Ole Miss finds their way onto that schedule with Lane Kiffin. How much of a troll do we think Lane Kiffin will be on Twitter the week of the Tennessee game?
I imagine it will be high. I mean, that's going to be – how unfortunate would that be if Lane Kiffin finally comes back to Neyland and the fans can't be there?
I know, right?
I mean, that's a cruel twist of fate. But I'm sure he'll you know, make the fans' time online worth it, I'm sure. I think, you know, when all that rumor was happening this week that turned out to not be the case, that they were just going to extend the cross-divisional opponents, the Orgeron Kiffin revenge tour with Ole Miss and LSU sounded pretty fun with, you know, hey, early enrollees, don't go to class. You know, that would have been a storyline, of course. And then, you know, Kiffin, who obviously Tennessee fans have softened on. You know, when you look at we at The Athletic, we mathematically broke down who the fans had emailed and asked for as coach the most during the 2017 coaching search. Number one, Lane Kiffin. So they have softened on him a little bit, but, you know, I think revisiting some of those wounds, I think, you know, Lane Kiffin is probably the most responsible for Tennessee having three head coaches in three seasons, which sort of put them on this decade-long downward spiral. So, hey, it's, that would have been fun. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But, you know, I think I wouldn't say that it feels like a pipe dream to have fans at all, but I don't think there's going to be very many, and we'll see. I think it is going to vary from state to state, from city to city, and from week to week, how many fans are anywhere, and whether that's zero, whether that's 15,000, something like that, you know, we'll see. But the idea that, you know, there's still places talking about, oh, we can do half capacity, or, you know, if there's a college football game this year that's played in front of 50,000 people, I just don't buy that. Even if they're allowing that, you really think that you're going to be able to get 50,000 people to come, you know, watch college football? I just don't believe you'll be able to do that. I don't think there's enough people that are willing to roll the dice like that to watch any college football game, you know, whether that's a huge rivalry game or whatever. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't see that happening this year.
Yeah, if Lane Kiffin comes to Neyland Stadium and there's no fans, they should take the best Vol Twitter tweets or something and like put them on the seats, or like they've got to do,
get some mattresses in there. Yeah,
yeah, something like that. David, now David got me on the air fryer, Robbie, and I know you're an air fryer guy. He's getting me on the pellet grill. He likes to weave food into his writing, which I very much appreciate. And talking about the fat that's been cut from the schedule from these SEC teams, I'm going to read a line of David's story. College football is a lot like pulled pork in that even when it's bad, it's still pretty good, which is a reference to the fact that, you know, every game has some appeal. But do you think, David, that a taste of, wow, every single game's important is going to make it harder to go back to what we're used to seeing in the fall?
I think emotionally, I don't think it's going to matter. I think even if the fans want it, you know, I think there's too many incentives from coaches, from athletic administrators. But I don't think this is going to be, you know, a 10-game schedule, you know, within conference play. It's probably ever going to be a reality. But I think it you know, certainly it's better football. You know, you have, of course, more money staying in-house instead of going to other conferences. But, I mean, it's going to be a fun season. I mean, yeah, there's going to be some Arkansas and Vanderbilt, you know, provided the games get played. But, listen, I watched Tennessee play UTEP a couple of years ago, and I've seen them play. Let's see, the Charlotte game a couple of years ago was pretty rough. I've seen some bad games. And no matter how bad those Arkansas and Vanderbilt games are, they're not going to compare to some of those non-conference games I've seen Tennessee play. So this is going to be a weird year, but it's going to be fun. And let's hope that you know, every game gets played and there are no viruses anywhere on college campuses. That'd be fantastic.
Absolutely. David Ubben from The Athletic has been our guest here on Morning Drive. David, thanks so much for taking time to join us, man. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
When we come back, we're going to get back into a little Preds talk and break down what we saw yesterday from the Stars and look ahead to Arizona as well. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tipped onto the wall. Arvidsson reaches back fourth. Doing so against the big guy, Oleksiak, and now a shot deflected away to the left side. Follow-up shot of the score, and the Predators tally on the power play. Victor Arvidsson with the goal at 3:53.
All mayhem. It broke loose, and bodies were everywhere, and then Arvidsson picked up the loose change off to the side and found a way to get it in. It
comes back into the Nashville end. Roman Josi down the right wing side. They try to get around Johns. Fed in front of the score. Victor Arvidsson took a quick feed back. Philip Forsberg gave it to him. 2-0 Predators.
How about the little dingle-dangle from Philip Forsberg? The hands on Forsberg on showcase there, just dangling around Johns, finding the backhand pass over to Arvidsson.
I thought today was a real committed effort by our team, and I really like our mindset. We came in, I think, to a man. There was commitment on both sides of the puck, and nobody dipped their toe in the water, you know, which was nice. I think it was a pretty solid team effort, and we had some positives, obviously, and some negatives in the game. But the number one thing was that where is our mentality? Where was it going to be, and where is our commitment level going to be? And it was good today.
Big win for the Nashville Predators yesterday against the Dallas Stars, 2-0. In their exhibition matchup. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. And Joe, did you know you could stream 102.5 The Game from anywhere? Download the Game Nashville app, enable our Alexa skill or Google Home, and ask to play 102.5 The Game or live stream from our website, which is, of course, at thegamenashville.com. Joe, I was really impressed yesterday with what the Predators were able to do from a defensive standpoint. I thought they played really well defensively, especially in your first game back. You know, typically when you're coming back into play, you know, defense, you're trying to kind of figure out on the fly. Remember back to the regular season, they were scoring goals like crazy in their first 5 or 10 games of this past regular season, and defensively they were struggling. I mean, Pekka-Rinne was still playing pretty well for the most part, but they were giving up a lot of odd man rushes, a whole bunch of things. Thought everything from their gap control, which is, I'm not going to bore everybody with those details, but everything from that until, you know, their transition defense, their end zone coverage yesterday, I thought all of it was pretty good for the most part, which I think pretty encouraging if you're the Predators that your defense is already looking, from a systematic standpoint, pretty structured and pretty sound at this point.
All right, I'll counter that by asking, do we take anything away from Tyler Seguin being quote-unquote, unfit to play, from the fact that Dallas has struggled offensively from this matchup? What is this, 3 straight shutouts?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe there's some things that you don't want to – you just don't want to jump too much to conclusions,
sure,
because of opponent and opponent limitations.
But also, it's one game in hockey. We know how different game-to-game can be in hockey.
Yeah. But, look, I thought that for 60 minutes, there was never a point where I thought that there was a big issue for the Preds. I thought the Stars showed more fight later, But then Pecorine stepped up to in his half of the game to snuff out some good opportunities. They got really nothing good when Saros was in goal. To your point, they were playing very well. The blocking of the shots stood out to me. And I think it stood out to me because this team, I think at times, has not been that team this year. And then in every aspect, you talk about the gritty playoff hockey things that you want to see, and then the finesse things that this team has to get better at, in particular the power play. I thought it was a lot of encouraging things.
And the other part that I don't think we've addressed yet today is, you know, we were talking earlier this week about, okay, what does this game mean for the Predators, as in it's their one tune-up game before they have the real thing, elimination game, start on Sunday? How much different is the mindset going to be for Dallas? Like, what is Dallas wanting to accomplish out of this game? Now, certainly, they would have liked to have played better than they did yesterday against the Predators. There's no question about it. But I do wonder, from an urgency standpoint, it did look like the Predators were on a little bit of a higher gear from that standpoint than the Stars were. And I wonder what the end result of that means in terms of what we saw on the score.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Sagan's not out there. And like you said, I mean, they're going to be playing, what is their first game, Tuesday or something?
Something like that.
I mean, they're playing for seeding, but they know they're in. They know that they are one of the 16 teams when it gets to 16. So that, compared with a team that is playing Sunday for playoff life, is different. And so, yeah, you have to put all these caveats into an analysis of that game. It still doesn't mean the Predators didn't play well. They did. Yeah. They did play well. It's just also matchups are different, and now a very different one comes Sunday.
It was funny because, like, all year long we've watched games where we notice Roman Josi, like, he's the one guy who really stands out. And he was good yesterday, but I would say on the list of people that I noticed, he was probably, I don't know, fifth or sixth on that list. That's not a knock against him. But I say that because it's funny. He made a great pass to lead Philip Forsberg, who made the play to Arvidsson for the second goal. Roman Josi was fine. Like, there was one instance, I think, where the Stars, I think it was Janmark, broke out shorthanded and had a chance going the other way because the Predators flubbed the puck at the blue line. And I looked at who was skating back to chase him down, and it was Josi. And I put my head down. I didn't even start watching him. I was like, well, he's got him. There's not going to be a scoring chance out of this. So I wonder if, like, I've gotten to the point, and Predators fans have gotten to the point, where we watch Josi just kind of do what he does and we take it for granted.
Right. Well, and we've watched how many times this year where he stood out so much compared with the rest of his team.
Right.
And carried them, or just, it's like, okay, well, there's one guy who's playing at an elite level tonight. And it's obviously great for the Preds that he doesn't top the list on a night like this, because they're going to need a lot more people to play the way Victor Arvidsson did yesterday.
And speaking of Arvidsson, he was outstanding. Speed-wise, he was great. I thought positioning, chemistry he had with Johansson Forsberg, really good. We talked yesterday. Victor Arvidsson looks like Victor Arvidsson. He proved it again yesterday. Had a scary moment with the knee-on-knee hit, but everything appears to be fine from that perspective. He said he was fine after in the press conference as well. So feeling really good about Victor Arvidsson. And if he's playing like he played yesterday, Joe, on the list of X factors in the series against Arizona, he's got to be towards the top, because if he's playing like that, he's playing at a level that Victor Arvidsson wasn't at pretty much all season.
Can Victor Arvidsson be an X factor?
Sure, man.
Okay. Because, I mean, you're talking
playoffs,
about
playoffs, right? Everybody's talked about playoff inconsistencies from him. He can be an X factor.
Yeah, but, I mean, he's one of your top players on your top line.
He is.
Like, I think of X factor as,
like,
Kalle Yarnkrok.
Right.
But that's fine.
I hear what you're saying.
I'm not going to – if you want to call him the X factor, you
Joe
call
Rule's
him
getting into semantics on me here.
Hey, Joe Rule sets the rules.
Wow, that's nice. Very nice. When we come back, our good friend Teron Davenport from ESPN, NFL Nation's Titan reporter, will join us. We'll get into a little Titans talk, figure out what he thinks about the Vic Beasley situation, which has been very strange to monitor. That's next. This is Morning Drive, live from the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side.
race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.